हरि ओ
सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सो पेज 90 Akura's mission in Hastinapur. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 7, Akura meets the Kurus. 8 to 15, prayers by Kunti Devi. 16 to 31, Akura delivers Krishna's message to Dhritarashtra. Verses 1 to 7, Akura meets the Kurus. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, Akura went to Hastinapur, the city distinguished by the glory of the Kaurava rulers. There he saw Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Vidura, and Kunti, along with Bahlika and his son Somadatta. He also saw Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Karna, Suryodhana, Ashwatthama, the Pandavas, and other close friends. Footnote 39. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that he met the Pandavas last to show his neutrality and to give them instructions on Dharma. According to Srila Sanatan Goswami, the Pandavas are mentioned last, being situated far away and not being respected. Right, so then you're going down and, you know, how they would be respected, their positions and everything like that. Bahlika is the brother of Shantanu, right, which is the father of Bhishmadeva. And so then his son is Somadatta. So they're mentioned in the Gita. So that's the one you're talking about. Grandparents, great-grandparents, that's them. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, thus ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Akura visited Hastinapur, said to be the site of what's now New Delhi. The part of New Delhi still known as Indraprastha is accepted by people in general as the old capital of the Pandavas. The very name Hastinapur suggests that there were many Hustis, or elephants. Because the Pandavas kept many elephants in their capital, it was called Hastinapura. Keeping elephants is very expensive, and to keep many elephants, therefore, the kingdom must be very rich. And Hastinapura, as Akura saw when he reached it, was full of elephants, horses, chariots, and other opulences. The kings of Hastinapur were taken to be the ruling kings of the whole world. Their fame was widely spread throughout the entire kingdom, and their administration was conducted under the good counsel of learned Brahmins. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. After Akura, the son of Gandini, had appropriately greeted all his relatives and friends, they asked him for news of their family members, and he in turn asked about their welfare. He remained in Hastinapur for several months to scrutinize the conduct of the weak-willed king, who had bad sons and who was inclined to give in to the whims of mischievous advisors. Kunti and Vidura described to Akura in detail the evil intentions of Dhritarashtra's sons, who could not tolerate the great qualities of Kunti's sons, such as their powerful influence, military skill, physical strength, bravery, and humility, or the intense affection the citizens had for them. Right, because they had all the good qualities, and they would deal as such, so therefore then the citizens all had an affection for them, which they didn't have for Duryodhana. It means they were good rulers, so that they were comfortable with that, but they didn't have that affection like that, because the Pandavas would deal with the citizens like they were their children, so therefore they reciprocate in that way. Well, Duryodhana, it was just he was ruling the kingdom because he wanted to be in power, he wanted the facility, he wanted the fame, the honor, all these things. So then, you know, he'll do a good job and people are okay with that. But it's not that they personally have a relationship like they did with the Pandavas. Kunti and Vidura also told Akura about how the sons of Dhritarashtra tried to poison the Pandavas and carry out other such plots. Kunti Devi, taking advantage of her brother Akura's visit, approached him confidentially. While remembering her birthplace, she spoke with tears in her eyes. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. Since he was deputed by Lord Krishna to visit Hastinapur, it is understood that he was very intelligent and studying a diplomatic situation. Dhritarashtra was unlawfully occupying the throne after the death of King Pandu, despite the presence of Pandu's sons. Right? So technically, he should not have been the king. He would have been one of the Kshatriyas there, and he would have been taken care of very nicely. And his cousins then would have been, you know, had their positions and had their authority. So everybody would have been taken care of nicely if Yudhishthira had been the king, because he's supposed to be the king. Because Pandu was the king, because Vidura couldn't be the king, Dhritarashtra technically shouldn't be the king. And so therefore then, it should be, if Pandu was the king, then his son then should be the king. But since he didn't have any son, then Dhritarashtra was there, he went to the forest, like that, but then in that position, they had sons, so then, because they were there, they should have been the kings. It shouldn't have been this other way. But by having it this way, then all the demoniac kings on the planet will rally behind Duryodhana, and then in one fell swoop, they can all be destroyed. Akura could understand very well that ill-motivated Dhritarashtra was much inclined in favor of his own sons. In fact, Dhritarashtra had already usurped the kingdom and was now intriguing to dispose of the five Pandava brothers. Akura knew that all the sons of Dhritarashtra, headed by Duryodhana, were very crooked politicians. Dhritarashtra did not act in accordance with the good instructions given by Bhishma and Vidura. Instead, he was being conducted by the ill instructions of such persons as Karna and Shakuni. Akura decided to stay in Hastinapur for a few months to study the whole political situation. Verses 8-15. Right, because you want to study, because there's so many fine details there, you can't come to a conclusion quickly. And he's, you know, related and all that, so then if he stays and spends time and then all that, because if you come formally, you'll hear certain things. But if you're there informally, then certain things come up. You'll see moods and that you won't see otherwise. So then by staying for so many months, then he can talk to the various persons, and he can also observe and see how they deal, what's happening and everything. Yes?
So we see two leaders both competent in terms of management.
Yes.
However, one seems to be more personal and one is more impersonal.
Yes.
So is that a matter of charisma, or what would be the difference?
Basically the qualities, what qualities they're manifesting. So someone's a good manager, then that's good, they should do management. But the point is that leadership means then people are inspired.
Right.
The manager means that the organization goes well.
Yes.
A leader means that people are inspired to take part in that organization. So the leadership is actually higher. So people talk about leadership, but you know, they talk about it, but they only study the techniques of management. That's the difficulty. So the Pandavas, because of their good qualities and that therefore they could lead the people. That's why everybody liked to follow them. And all the different kings, and they were committed. Because of the good qualities. That's why then knowledge and skills is there, but you have to have the proper qualities. Then when you, and use those knowledge, skills, and qualities when you apply. Because otherwise many will just apply the knowledge and skill. And then where there's a need of the qualities, they won't use it because they say it's inefficient for the skill. But the point is management includes the whole thing. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let us say, I want to cut the potatoes. So I take the knife, I take the potato, I start cutting. That's very efficient. But now, if I want to consider the long-term effect of the counter and the knife, I need a cutting board. But the problem is the cutting board is always in some funny out-of-the-way place because it's a funny size that doesn't fit in the regular places. So therefore, I have to go looking for that. Even if I know where it is, that, you know, that two steps and bending over to get it is just way too much, you know, effort for the perfect efficiency I can get from just cutting straight on the counter. You understand? So, from one sense, I could say it's more efficient to do it this way, but if you look at the whole picture of maintaining the counter, maintaining the knife, and then the advantage of the cutting board, then you can move it and do different things like that. So there's more advantage. Like in cooking, the counter is not where I'm cooking. Right? I'm going to be cutting somewhere else. You know, some other part of the counter. But the cutting board, I can pick up and put right next to the stove. You know what I'm saying? So if you look at it overall, it's more efficient. You know, or I have to invest, the counter is wood, and so then I can cut on it. But how many people have a 2-inch thick laminated wooden counter? Right? Except in France. But other than that, who does that? You understand? So then the problem comes is that we'll say it's better, but actually it's not. So then the efficiency of just applying the knowledge and skill, it does work, and it does get the work done, but because the people you're working with aren't as pleased by it, therefore it's not leadership. Because leadership is they get involved, they get inspired. So it's a different thing. So you can be a leader and not a manager. Or you can be a leader and a manager. Right? But just because you're a manager doesn't mean you're automatically a leader. Does that make sense? So there's a distinction here. So that's the thing. They were good managers. They weren't good leaders.
Because nowadays there's a popular discussion about leadership.
Authentic.
Being authentic.
Being authentic.
Yeah.
Being real.
Yes.
But what is that? That's an oxymoron. How does being real and being a manager have anything to do with each other? Because when they say you have to be real, what is the qualities they're looking for in being real? I mean, what makes it real?
Straightforward.
Okay.
Yeah, without pretension, straightforward.
Okay, but does that include things like humility and culture and those things?
Yes.
It means, but how it's being taught is that? Because when you say straightforward means that I can say whatever I want. But that's not cultured. A cultured person doesn't say whatever he wants. He says what's necessary. Does that make sense? What's within the realm of his authority or activity. So if it doesn't affect your activity, you don't speak about these other things. That's cultured. So being straightforward can also be therefore manipulated to say whatever I want. I don't have to be cultured. I can say whatever I want. And I'm just being straightforward. I was just saying. Why are you getting offended? I was just saying. I was just trying to help. So all these things that I can do what I want and everybody else has to manifest good qualities. Because the other person is being straightforward by getting upset. But I say, oh, that's wrong. He shouldn't get upset. I was just being straightforward. So I'm doing the good thing. So why is it get so you understand it becomes self-centered. So it's not leadership. Being straightforward means it's according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And according to how you understand that and you explain it, what's going on. That's straightforward. But the point is that you can't work in the diplomatic field without being diplomatic. You know, that's stupid. You know, so being straightforward, what do you mean? You know what I'm saying? Because they're worried about the people are too much politicians. So they're duplicitous. So straightforward, yes, but it still has to be based on something. Otherwise, how do you define straightforwardness? How do you define what should be said, what shouldn't be said? Because previously there was no term that's too much information. Because before, people were diplomatic and knew what to say. Now, with this whole idea of being straightforward, being open, being transparent and all that, people say stuff they shouldn't say. And people have to tell them, please don't say that. I don't want to hear about it. because it's a private thing. It's not about the service. So that's what I'm saying is her talking about being real, true to yourself, but that's your personal thing. That's an ashram thing. And then management, that's a varna thing. So they have to know how to balance those and how they have an effect. But true to yourself means according to what is the nature defined by Krishna. So are we actually true to ourselves? Or it's just a matter of, no, whatever feelings I'm feeling at the time, that's I deal with. But that's not being true to yourself. That just means being uncontrolled, like a child or like an animal. You know what I'm saying? So unless there's a reason or scriptural injunction or that authority that at this point you should deal like that. You know, it's like Shishupal is insulting Krishna, and so therefore the devotees get upset and get angry. That's supported by scripture. You know what I'm saying? But someone says something and, oh yeah, you know, this and that, I hate this, I hate that. You know, who cares? You know, what does that got to do with reality? You know, so this all being real is because in ashram, who's real? And so therefore now they're trying to make varna real, because that's what they don't have a life. But the point is, no, your life should be real, and varna is about getting things done that's there, but within the proper etiquette. Does that make sense? So the point is again, as we discussed earlier, we're using these qualities, like being straightforward is one of the qualities of a devotee. But the point is unless it's seen in the context of the Vedic version, is it actually straightforward? And straightforward of what? You know, like I say, well, you know, I don't like your hat. You know, what does that got to do with anything? Right? You like the hat, keeps your head warm. We're discussing philosophy. It's nothing to do with hats. Right? So it's not a point on the table. But I'm being straightforward. I'm just revealing my mind. I'm just being myself. And yeah. And there's people. They'll say anything about everybody at any time. They just have no discrimination. But they think that they're being personal. They're being real. They're being... And it's a real annoyance. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't know what you'll get. Well, if you know you're dealing with this, and then it'll be on that topic, it'll move in that way. You know, people will be careful how they say it. Like the cultured people, then they'll do things and they object and this and that, and they, you know, they throw their napkins around and stuff like that. But the point is they're saying it all in a nice way. Well, this modern thing, it's not nice. So it's neither diplomatic, it's not nice, it's not effective, it has nothing to do with what you're talking about. You know, the principle is that you're thinking that this should be there, you shouldn't be shy if it's something worth saying. But if it's something that you think this, but if it's said at this time, it won't have any effect, you don't say it. You wait. Like I remember one manager on the GBC, they would very rarely speak. They would sit in the meeting and listen as everybody argues and yells and screams and stands up on the table and, you know, does whatever they do. And after everybody's kind of exhausted themselves and this and that, and they still come to no conclusion because he's heard all sides and all that. He analyzes all that. And then he would say something, you know, pleasantly, just say, you know, it should be like this, and then everyone would accept. And they saw them do it many, many times. Because they would wait. So that means they had to wait for 45 minutes before saying something. Because everybody else, that's generally the average time people will just talk, and that's how much emotional, you know, that's how long it can last. Right? So, you know, after that much time, they'd run out of things to say. Because how many times can you say the same thing over and over again? So that's then of you know, being true to yourself, this and that. But the point is it about getting something done in the society of devotees and being in that way culturally effective and you know, mechanically effective, devotionally effective? Or is it just that I can say whatever I feel like and I'm going to palm that off that this is real management? Does that make sense? So one has to be very, very careful. That's the weakness of coming in from the modern things. Not that those points aren't good and valid, but unless they're defined according to the Vedic version, they won't actually do the job very well. Right? If it's coming from a person who's famous for that and is very effective, then how they're defining it, you can take that and use it, but then you should yourself connect it back to Krishna. Because you do have people that are very effective. You know, if you want to learn how to use money and Warren Buffett's talking, then you listen. He doesn't know how to connect it to Krishna, but hey, you know, you do that. But if it's just some guy's coming in doing a thing because he studied so many books and so many this and that, but he hasn't made a paisa in his life, other than what you pay at his seminar, you know, then what he has to say is not actually worth listening to. You know, unless, of course, you want to read all those books, and by going to this, then he'll have already done it for you, and then you can take it forward from there, but how he's presenting it and that's not there. You'll have to take it and yourself analyze it, put it together. Because if he was so good at it, why isn't he making more money? You understand? The guy who makes money, then they do the seminars, is different from the guy who just does seminars on how to make money. They're two different things. Is that good?
Krishna is telling the same statement.
Krishna is telling the same statement.
Austerity of speech is anudvega karam vatyam. Means no vega, anudvega. Satyam priyam hitam. It should be truthful. Priyam means pleasing, and hitam beneficial to the other.
Beneficial. Okay. So that's the standard. You heard?
No.
No. Krishna in the Gita, then he's explaining austerity of the speech. So then it must be?
Anudvega means not.
Anudvega, which
Satyam.
Is?
Satyam. Anudvega means not agitating.
Yeah, it should not be agitating. It should be pleasant. Then, Satyam, it should be truthful. That means it's based on scriptures.
Priyam.
And Priyam?
Pleasing.
It's pleasing.
And Hitam. Hitam.
Hitam.
Hitam means beneficial.
Beneficial. So that's then what you look for. So it's already given in Gita. But when you take the modern, they won't use all those parts. Because it's not based on scripture. You know, it's based on what you feel, like that. It may be based on some authority and this and that, and after a year or two, nobody cares about that authority. But, like that. So that's the combination. That's hard to do. So someone can do that, now that shows maturity and development. But otherwise, then this modern being true, because they'll be straightforward, but is it beneficial? Is it pleasant? You know, that kind of thing. You know, is it actually based on scripture? Because truthfulness means based on scripture. Nowadays, truth simply means fact. But the Vedic truth means based on scripture, based on authority. Fact is another thing. Is that? Then. So, therefore, the Pandavas were like that. So that's why they were appreciated. And Duryodhana and his group were not. Because whatever they said, you didn't know if that's real. Because I've seen so many is that you hear things, and then when you talk to the person directly, they're so nice. But after they leave, you hear stuff. You know, what they're saying, what they're, you know, what they're planning, what they're like that. But to your face, they'll be nice. So that's Duryodhana and his voice. You really don't know what you're going to get. So because of that, there's no security. While with Yudhishthira and that, what they say, you know that's going to happen. If he says, I'm doing this, he does that. So that's the other aspect of truthfulness, is you're saying stuff that you will do. We're taking it, no, I can say whatever facts I want, that's truthfulness. Or I can find out whatever facts I want, that's truth. Right? Transparent means you tell me everything I want to know, you know, and being truthful is I say whatever I want to say. But those aren't beneficial or nice. So Satyam, if Yudhishthira says he's doing it, you know it will happen. That's the meaning of truthfulness. Otherwise, people speak all kinds of stuff like that. And just because it may be a fact or connected to a fact or connected to a fact, then that's truthfulness, not truthfulness. It's based on Shastra. It's the duty. You have the knowledge and ability. You can do it. You will apply yourself to it to the best you can. Does that make sense? Like Arjuna says, I'm going to kill... What was his name?
Jayadratha.
Like that. So he said, I'm going to kill Jayadratha. You know, or I'm going to enter the fire. So at the end of the night, you know, he says, well, I just said that. You know, I was upset and everything like that. So, you know, no, he's going to enter the fire. That's truthfulness. You know? So that kind of person you can commit yourself to, surrender to. But the person, when it comes to themselves, that something goes wrong, well, you know, it happens. But when it comes to you, then that person, well, hey, that's just the way it is. We're in the real world, Prabhu, you know, it happens. But somehow or another, it doesn't happen with them. You can't trust them. So therefore, you can't, you don't have that faith. So you see, it's the qualities, the devotional qualities that are the point, not these ones that they pick and choose that are the flavor of the day. Because they're talking about forgiveness, this is the flavor of the day. You go back a few years, it was rage was the flavor of the day. It was all about rage. Remember that? Anyone remember that? Back in the 90s and stuff like that. It was bringing out all the dirt, saying all that, and everyone taking that seriously, and like this, and got to get those guys. That was the flavor of the day. And now they're talking about forgiveness and this and that. But they only forgive what people they want. It's not that it's across the board. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. It's just the flavor of the day. And those who are in the field, they know that and they use that because that's what's happening. But tomorrow when it changes, they change. Because they know how to be efficient. So it's not that they commit themselves to that. That's the difference, is that the karmis use this stuff and they don't actually believe in it. They just know it works. And we believe in it, and it doesn't work. You know, that's a problem. So that's why we stick to the Vedic version and use Yudhishthira, you know, as an example. Then we can learn very nicely what leadership is. Is it one of the qualities of the leaders? He's like the moon, that when you see them, you actually please. You like seeing them. You're happy to see them. So if you're not happy to see them, then they're lacking that quality of the moon. So the leader should have those eight qualities. So we see here they're happy. So Duryodhana not having that quality, then he was envious that Yudhishthira had it. Yes, and they worked under the counsel of good counsel of learned Brahmins. So Yudhishthira would do that, Duryodhana wouldn't. He would only, if they spoke in a way that supported what he wanted, then he would listen. And if they didn't, he wouldn't. So he wouldn't listen to Vidura, he wouldn't listen to Bhishma. The only Brahmin we hear of that he listened to really nicely was, I think, Kanika, I think was his name. Kanika or Kanka or... something like that. He was a pure nitiist, you know. Destroy your enemy down to the root. Anything connected to your enemy, destroy it. Then you know that was his philosophy. And Duryodhana liked that. It resonated.
Like-minded.
Yes. So he took that very seriously. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. After...
Verses 8 to 15.
How do we go back?
The book fell down.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, how do we get back there? Well, actually, we dropped the book, not the book. Bhagavatam is Achyuta, it doesn't fall down. Prayers by Kunti. Okay. Queen Kunti said, "O gentle one, do my parents, brothers, sisters, nephews, family, women, and girlhood friends still remember us? Does my nephew Krishna, the Supreme Personality, and the compassionate shelter of his devotees still remember his aunt's sons? And does lotus-eyed Rama remember them also? Now that I am suffering in the midst of my enemies like a doe in the midst of wolves, will Krishna come to console me and my fatherless sons with his words? Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me, who have surrendered to you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Although Krishna was not present before her, Kunti offered her prayers to him as if she were in his presence face to face. This is possible for anyone following in the footsteps of Kunti. Krishna doesn't have to be physically present everywhere. He is actually present everywhere by spiritual potency. And one simply has to surrender unto him sincerely. So wherever one is, one can pray. So that aspect, let's say, of the Protestants, that you can pray to God anywhere, you don't require to be in a church or with a priest to be able to connect to God, then that is a correct point. But you have to understand it's because Krishna is everywhere. His potency is everywhere. Therefore, and he's in the heart. So therefore, at any place, anytime, you can preach. But that doesn't mean that preaching in the temple taking darshan in the temple, working under the authorities of spiritual authorities is not good. It is good. It means both work, because Krishna's everywhere. Does that make sense? Otherwise, we get to think, oh, it's everywhere, but the temple's not so important, and that's the Mayavadi's place. Is God is everywhere, but they won't visit a temple. But if he's everywhere, he's in the temple also. But no, they won't go to the temple. They'll walk around the temple. They'll circumambulate. But they won't go in. Right? So they're not actually following the philosophy. So like this is then, you know, or the temples aren't important, only communities, this, that. You understand? These are where these philosophies come from. We think it's something new and fresh. No, it's this, you know, it's old. The BBQ purport mentions, since Lord Krishna maintains the entire universe, thought Kunti Devi, surely he can protect our family. The word avasidatim indicates that Kunti Devi was overwhelmed by troubles. Thus exhausted, she was helplessly taking shelter of Sri Krishna. In her prayers in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kunti admits that all these troubles were actually a blessing, for they forced her to always be intensely Krishna conscious. Right, so they were having these troubles, and she's saying about this, but in discussing this, then she's remembering Krishna. So that's the point that it reminds her. So then later when she saw Krishna, and he came, and now all the problems were over, they've gotten the kingdom back, and she said it was actually better when we had, you know, it was better when it was worse. Because then they always had were remembering Krishna. Well, now then they get absorbed in their day-to-day activities. Yeah, Kunti admits that all these troubles were actually a blessing, for they forced her to always be intensely Krishna conscious. That's why problems aren't really a problem for devotees. Because they remind you of Krishna, right? And you take shelter of Krishna, which is the actual purpose. We're here performing our activities based on our previous karma, the situations we're in, what we have. So we perform all these activities. And we connect it to Krishna, because that's the future. Right? Krishna is the future. Mm-hmm. And so the activities here going well, that's not actually the perfection. Being Krishna conscious, that's the perfection. So therefore, the troubles that happen in these activities then remind us of Krishna, so that way then they are actually furthering the real purpose of the soul. Right? Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami comments to verse 9 in the Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 186 titled Raso Lasa. Raso Lasa. Huh?
Lalsa.
Lal. So it's not a double L.
Yeah, it's L A L S A.
Oh, okay. So the L moves over.
Mm-hmm.
Raso.
Lalsa.
Lalsa. Okay. Some unsuitable combinations produce bliss in rasa. Again, it said like that. You sure it's supposed to be so? If they increase the suitable sthiti by special methods. Aishwarya Gyana Dasya Bhakti is unsuitable for Kunti and stuck between. It's an ant or an on. Yeah, I grew up with ant, but everybody else says aunt. Okay. Vatsalya is suitable, but that Dasya is suggested by the word Bhagavan. This is overshadowed, however, by the words Bratreya, nephew, and Pitri Svasyayan, ant. Sorry. By mentioning lotus-eyed, Vatsyalya becomes strong, and there's increase in rasa. Right, so these things are that it's not actually the means it has elements of unsuitable combinations, but in Dwarka these things may work. So sometimes if they're combined just right, they work. Just like someone who's very expert in tastes and flavors in cooking, they can mix things that you normally wouldn't mix, and it works. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea is that. If you know it works, but it's not the natural position. It'll be there for something, then it'll go back. It's a variation. It's not the standard. Queen Kunti continued, for persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, pray for something else for gaining protection. Perform sat karmas, etc. To reject such a proposal, this verse states that the Lord gives protection not just from enemies, but even from samsara. Everyone should surrender to the Lord. I do not see other methods like sat karmas. By performing renunciation or other methods, generally mankind becomes fearful, right? Because you lose your position, you lose what you identify with. So, therefore, becoming fearful. That's why then fear is that basis. It's also in the position of envy, which is in the position of I, which is in the position of I'm the controller. Right? So it has that common position. So even though one gets renounced, one becomes fearful. So then one is worried about one's position. And so, but if it's renounced, it means in connection to Krishna, meaning it's engaged in Krishna's service, then there's no fear because the relationship is there, it's strong. But for like the impersonalists, they're functioning in fear, right? The karmis are functioning in attachment. And the Buddhists are functioning in anger, right? Because fear and attachment didn't work, right? And so the idea is that it increases fear. So we give up, but then we become fearful. Okay, I give this up, now what? What's my identity? So we always keep it in connection with Krishna, that we're functioning in our duties in connection with Krishna, then whatever is given up is connected with Krishna. It doesn't create fear. Does that make sense? So then one can then, just like the grihastha life is there, then one gives that up for the vanaprastha life. Does that make sense? But if one just gives it up, but does not have that connection to Krishna, or doesn't see it, one will become fearful because now one doesn't necessarily have a place, or one has a smaller place, or it's a new place, or there's not so much money, or there's not so much facilities, there's not so much social position and authority. So if that's your identity, then you become disturbed. But if you see it as just the natural thing, is now I can increase my hearing and chanting, now you can increase the serving, I can increase, you know, interacting with devotees, and, you know, whatever it is, my sadhana, or different things, all things that I always wanted to do devotionally that I've never been able to do because of the grihastha, you know, restrictions that are there in grihastha life, now I can do those, and it's all connected to Krishna, then there's no fear. You understand? So she's pointing out is all these troubles. Okay, no, not that one. No. Down here. Yes, so he gives up samsara. So as long as you see yourself within samsara, then there'll be fear. Because samsara means you have to have facility, then you're applying that facility, you know, enjoying that facility, but if that facility runs out, then there's fear. Right, so therefore I work because I want money, because I don't want it to run out, because my security is money. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the idea. Is that yeah? So like that, then but Krishna, then by worshipping him, samsara is destroyed. Then there's no fear. So someone in Krishna consciousness doesn't have fear. That's the whole point. Yes.
So Maharaj, if somebody has full shelter in Krishna, there is no fear.
Yes. So to that degree, you're surrendered to Krishna, then you won't have fear. Yes. Because fear comes from many. I mean, there's the fear that someone's bothering you or giving you trouble. Yes, there's that. But then there's also just the fear of your existence, how you'll be taken care of, who are you, where you'll be, this and that. And you know what I'm saying? You know, so you're worried about so many things like that. But if it's dependent on Krishna, then, you know, you're intelligent according to your duties. But the point is you're not worried. Krishna will take care.
Yes.
You know, because if we think about it, we've always had a place to stay. We've always had food. We've always had this and that. You know, and now and again there'll be some little thing like that, but then it makes you surrender to Krishna. Does that make sense? And so then it works out, because Krishna is there. He's reciprocating. So by surrendering to him, then that's there. So, yes.
We've seen that Arjuna's fear actually increased in Bhagavad Gita when he's saying that person being like a cloud with no shelter named his fear.
Yes.
Because he's unsuccessful materially, because he invested into spiritual. But then in spiritual, he didn't reach the final destination. So sometimes you feel like that also. Now, I'm losing here, and I'm also unsuccessful here.
But during the process you can't be unsuccessful. What would happen if the cook halfway through cooking starts lamenting that, you know, they're not successful in cooking because the preparation's not ready? Will it be an advantage?
No.
Yeah. So therefore we're following the process. We have faith in that bona fide process as given by Krishna and the Acharyas. Then by following that we will be. That's why the Puranas are recommended. Because you see stories of people becoming perfect. They followed it, they became perfect. You know, we might take a little bit longer than Dhruva Maharaj, but, you know. You know, so, like that, you know. But the point is we're following the process, so that will make for the perfection. So we don't have to worry. Because if we identify with the devotee, then we're following the process. And the point is following the material, we've followed it since time immemorial, and it's still never given us any real satisfaction. Right? So that's the whole point, is that the only time you see someone may show some satisfaction is when there's that feeling of surrender. They just surrender to, yeah, no, I've had a good life, and everything's went well, nice family, this, that. You know, I've done all right, I've gotten whatever you can expect from life and all, but there's a surrender there. That's all you can do. But otherwise, on a daily basis, you don't want people saying, you know, yeah, I'm happy, you know, unless they, you know, snorted a line of cocaine or something. But, you know, other than that, but come back after another hour or two, and he's not going to be saying that. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it doesn't work out so well for those guys. Yes.
Basically, probably more fear is not being unsuccessful during the process, not having enough faith to go on.
Yes, that would be there. But then you're fearful of what will happen to me. Where will I go? Because if I don't continue this materially, what can I fall back on? But the point is we've been situated in the material since time immemorial. It's never given us anything. That's why we've tried to leave it and move forward in the spiritual life. So the idea I will fall back on the material, that's not actually an option, because it didn't work before. Why will it work now? Right? If before we joined, material life was miserable, why after joining now material life suddenly so good? Why will it change? You know, oh, now Trump's president, now it'll be fine. Now I can be a materialist. You know? I mean, you know, is that how it's going to work? Yes? No. So it's no different. In fact, it's worse. It's Kali Yuga, so it's getting worse. The only thing that is going in the opposite direction is the Samkirtan movement. So the golden age is for the Samkirtan movement, not for the karmas. Not saying that we have anything against those who are, vertically challenged. But, you know, but that's the direction that Kali Yuga is going. Yes.
But people have a feeling that even though we fall, we fall into the material, but we are suffering with the crowd. Means many people.
You're suffering with the crowd, so you feel feel happy. Everybody's suffering, so I'm all
so
right.
Like
yeah, but the point is why? I mean, since you're suffering anyway, and that others are suffering, be comfortable. The whole world is suffering, and I'm also suffering. But I'm in a process that will solve that suffering while they're not. Why you do want to give up the process that will solve the suffering? Since by taking shelter of the material sphere, it doesn't actually solve the problem of suffering or fear or anything. But the point is why not be doing something that's progressive? You know what I'm saying? It's like people are fat, right? But you're fat, but you're at the gym. You know what I'm saying? So, you have a solution.
But especially when you meet such kind of devotees who has, like, they have
means
all the
who are
knowledge.
Fat or who are fearful?
Who are fearful.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday I met one couple.
Fearfully fat.
I met one couple, they want to join in Gurukul, but still the mother is always thinking that, okay, they have all the philosophy, okay, but still she is fearful when I get certificate or like that. So they are
and how has that helped her?
She did.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm always impressed with parents who don't have a certificate and they're worried that their kid must have one, otherwise he won't make it in the world.
Father
right?
is fully convinced to join him in the Gurukul.
Oh, okay. So
mother is
because he has the certificate. And she doesn't have, so she wants it. What to do? You have to go by what's there. You always have to remember is that you're having children to make them God conscious. And the home is important, but there's only a certain amount that you can teach. You give the foundation. In other words, the foundation of religion, Krishna consciousness, the philosophy, that's all given at the home. And the better that's given, the better the child will do in the educational process. If the parent hasn't done much in that, it makes it harder to work with. Right? But the point is that there comes a point where that's all the more you can do. It's just like, let us say, okay, I want to bake a cake. Okay? So, where do I start this baking process?
In the recipe.
Yeah, I'm looking in the book at the recipe. So now do I stay in the book? All I need is the book in front of me and I'll have a cake? No, it changes. Then I have to go to the cupboard, get all the ingredients, and get the kind. Then it changed. Now it's the bowl. Everything's in the bowl. It's all about the bowl. You know, be the bowl. You are the bowl. You know, all that. It's all happening in the bowl. Now, do we just leave it in the bowl? No, you have to pour it in the pan and then put it in the oven. Now, when it's done in the oven, do we leave it in the oven and all that? No, you have to take it out of the oven. Then you have to put, you know, whatever copying you're going to put on that. Right? And then does it just stay there? No, now you have to offer it to Krishna. And then will it just stay there? No, then it goes on the table and then you'll eat it. You understand? So it's always progressing. So that's the whole thing, is that it will always move, it will always work. You just have to know that there's a limit to what the house can do, because otherwise if you're just growing up in the house, then you can have a problem, is that they're dependent upon the wife, not that the wife can be dependent upon them. Right? Just like the son, he kind of demands what he wants from the mother. And it works because it's Vatsalya Rasa. The mother's in the masculine position, which means I take care of the one in the feminine position, which happens to be the son. So therefore, according to the son's interests in this and that, then you take care. Now what if this boy grows up? Then he expects that his wife will act like his mother. With benefits. Right? And so then that's the problem. So therefore he's the woman and his wife has to be the man. You know? But he'll claim he's a man when he's not. He's a woman. You know, kind of like JoJo. Right? Yes? So that's the problem. So therefore, that's why the system is there. Because boys become men in association with men, not with women. Now once they become men, now it's natural for them to go back and function as men in the society with women. And then it'll work. Does that make sense? Because if you're a kid, that's all right. Your mother, it doesn't matter how old you are, she's still going to be cool. But every other lady on the planet is not cool. You know, they want you to grow up and be a man. Does that make sense? Is that okay? But whatever, you have to make it all work at once. So you have to work at the degree that the father, the mother, and the child can relate to the educational process and how you know they're fitting in. So you have to take it at their speed. That's the, you know what I'm saying. The Vedic consideration is when the child's ready. But in the modern, it has to be with the child and the parents. You know, so you just have to consider more. So as they're ready, then it works. And sometimes they're ready for a while because they know they can't do anything real serious now when they're young, so Gurukul is okay. When they get older, when they can do serious education, then they should switch to the Karmi education. You have those also. And then something, no, they should always be in it, otherwise they won't be good. You know, like they, you know, so you have various combinations of the importance of pieces of paper. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.